It is Wednesday, July 15. The news cycle today felt like watching a series of long-term bets finally come due. Let's look at what actually happened. The race to build artificial intelligence has officially left the software lab and moved into the power plant. Governments and corporations are no longer just fighting over lines of code. They are fighting over data center locations, grid capacity, and the physical infrastructure required to sustain these massive compute loads. The Australian government is launching an Office of AI to manage this transition. They are aiming to balance industrial growth with national security, copyright protections, and energy consumption. It is a state-led approach to a global problem. They want to ensure that data centers do not cause local price inflation for water or electricity. But it is a high-stakes gamble. If the regulatory burden becomes too heavy, global tech firms might just take their investment somewhere else. Here is the thing about this infrastructure build. It is looking less like a tech boom and more like the 19th century expansion of the railroads. Companies are committing to 3 to 5 year lead times for hardware. That is a hell of a long time to wait for a return on investment. The energy sector is effectively the new bottleneck for this entire project. Data centers are power hungry, and they are putting immense strain on regional grids. We are seeing a reactionary shift in policy because of it. New York has already moved toward a moratorium on certain data center builds. Developers are now trying to bypass the grid entirely by moving to off-grid fuel cells or local storage. They are trying to avoid the public backlash that comes when household energy bills start to climb. It is getting messy on the financial side, too. Cloud providers like CoreWeave, that is CoreWeave, are using complex derivatives to hedge against memory chip price volatility. They are essentially putting price floors on storage to guarantee they have the hardware they need. There is a massive amount of capital tied up in this single trade. If demand for chips drops even a little, we could see a liquidity shift that ripples across the entire market. The central tension here is between corporate efficiency and social stability. Companies are funding this massive capital expenditure by cutting back on other traditional spending. They are betting that AI will lead to broad productivity gains. But there is a real risk of a political backlash if they prioritize automation over workers without having a strategy for displacement. The market has largely decoupled from interest rate sensitivity for now. Earnings growth is the main engine, with the S&P 500 projecting 22% growth year over year. But this is a fragile kind of growth. It is built on the assumption that AI will eventually pay for itself through higher margins and subscription models. It is also creating a fragmented global order. The United States is exporting its tech stack with security guardrails while China is building an entirely independent ecosystem. It makes the world more expensive and less efficient. We are trading global economic efficiency for national security. It is a classic move, really. When countries get nervous, they stop looking for the best price and start looking for the most control. We are left with a system that is increasingly sensitive to hardware price volatility and regulatory friction. If these governments and firms can manage the energy costs and the social fallout, they might set a new standard for national infrastructure. If they fail, they are just going to create a series of expensive, bureaucratic bottlenecks. It is a weird position to be in. We are betting the future of the global economy on a massive, energy-intensive build-out that, frankly, nobody is entirely sure how to power or regulate yet. The speed at which this has moved from a cool experiment to a geopolitical and energy crisis is enough to make your head spin. Anyway, we will see if the productivity gains actually show up. Until then, we are just watching companies scramble to secure the power grid and hedge their bets on silicon. That energy scramble is just the physical manifestation of the tech sector's latest pivot. We are also seeing a shift in how those companies manage their software. The industry is officially cooling off on the idea of letting autonomous AI agents run wild. Software engineers and business consultants are shifting their focus away from unconstrained automation toward what they call harness engineering, a model where human oversight is the primary gatekeeper for every action an AI takes. This isn't just a pivot in strategy. It is a direct response to the realization that probabilistic models are not deterministic software. When you feed a model data, you are merging the control plane with the data plane, which creates a systemic vulnerability where malicious intent can hide in training sets until it is triggered. Because these systems lack reproducible build guarantees, security experts are warning that traditional perimeters are useless. We are looking at a future where models act as potential Trojan horses if they are not wrapped in continuous, multi-layered guardrails. Here is the thing about this shift. It is happening because the honeymoon phase of just letting models do stuff has hit a wall. In software development, teams are finding that automated coding factories speed up output but leave behind a trail of unmaintainable technical debt. The industry is now prioritizing the slow loop pattern. This means using AI for small, focused tasks that require a human to sign off at every step, rather than letting an agent try to build an entire feature in one go. The goal has moved from maximizing autonomy to maximizing agency. It is a subtle distinction, but it matters. By creating an inner loop for machine execution and an outer loop for human-led oversight, companies are trying to enforce institutional standards that models just cannot grasp on their own. There is a weird, contradictory energy in the market right now, though. While technical teams are building these complex, high-friction harnesses to manage risk, the consulting world is selling the exact opposite. There is a booming market for standardized, off-the-shelf AI tool assessments. These consultants are marketing themselves as operational partners who sell a simple, four-phase diagnostic service that relies on existing tools rather than custom code. They are promising high margins by avoiding the complexity of bespoke builds. It is a hell of a business model, essentially charging a flat fee to tell people which SaaS tools they should have been using all along. It avoids the maintenance nightmares of custom software, but it also creates a massive reliance on third-party providers. The tension here is obvious. On one side, you have engineers terrified that autonomous systems will silently sabotage critical infrastructure through subtle, long-term influence operations. On the other side, you have a growing cottage industry of service providers telling businesses that the path to success is just plugging in more off-the-shelf automation. It makes you wonder who is actually paying attention to the security reality. If your whole business strategy is to outsource your operational logic to third-party AI tools, you are essentially trading your internal control for a recurring monthly invoice. The consensus among the people actually building these systems is that we are at an inflection point. The era of the lights-off factory, where you just flip a switch and let the AI work, is clearly over. The organizations that actually survive the next few years will be the ones that treat AI as a reasoning partner that needs a leash, rather than a magic wand that can replace the need for human judgment. If you are looking for a takeaway, it is simple. If a tool promises to handle everything for you without a human in the loop, you should probably assume it is a liability, not an asset. We are moving toward a world where the most valuable skill isn't knowing how to prompt a model, but knowing how to build the harness that keeps it from burning the house down. It is not as flashy as the hype suggested, but honestly, it is a lot more sustainable. Building a harness for code is one thing, but political architecture is a different beast entirely. We have a look at how that is currently breaking down in Washington. The Washington Post reported that former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard received political instructions from an unelected advisor, Chris Butler of the Science of Identity Foundation. Internal memos show Butler directed her policy positions on veterans' health and visa issues. It is a hell of a thing to realize that a federal official was effectively a cutout for a private, reclusive leader. This isn't just about one politician being a sock puppet. It points to a rot where the public is reacting to a curated reality, while the actual levers of power are held by people who never appeared on a ballot. Whether it is a secret advisor drafting legislation or political appointees, prioritizing personal loyalty over the Department of Justice's independence, like we are seeing with the confirmation hearings for former Trump attorney Todd Blanche, the result is the same. The machinery of government is being treated as a private asset. Look at the collapse of the Senate campaign in Maine involving a candidate who was removed from the ballot following sexual assault allegations. The state party is now scrambling to replace him, but they are stuck. They have a voter base that wants real systemic change, and they have an establishment that just wants to hold the seat. When the party gatekeepers move to control the outcome, they only deepen the feeling that the whole democratic process is an illusion. That disconnect is exactly why these populist narratives gain so much ground. When people feel like the system is rigged, they stop looking for policy solutions and start looking for patterns. If the government can't provide a straight answer about state violence or national security, people will eventually stop trusting anything they are told. We are seeing a version of this in the United Kingdom, too. The government there is proposing a social media curfew for teenagers that is entirely voluntary and easily bypassed with a simple setting. It's a classic move. They want to look like they are doing something about online harm while refusing to actually regulate the tech companies that hold all the power. It isn't a policy, it's a performance. Here's the thing. We are currently stuck in a feedback loop where institutions refuse to be transparent, so the public loses trust. Then, because the public is skeptical, leaders double down on secrecy and obfuscation to maintain order. It is a shitty situation that turns the government into a source of instability rather than a provider of it. When political utility supersedes the duty to be forthright, we stop having a democracy and start having a theater production. None of this is happening in a vacuum. Whether it's Cold War rhetoric being recycled to avoid talking about actual economic instability, or the insistence that we need to return to objective truths to fix a fractured society, we are all just arguing over the script while the stage is falling apart. The danger isn't just that politicians are lying to us. The danger is that they have stopped believing that they owe us the truth at all. When you look at the way agencies like Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, operate without oversight, or how national intelligence priorities are shaped by hidden influencers, it's clear that the protection of the state's interests has been prioritized over the lives of the people it is supposed to serve. We are being asked to choose between an establishment that treats us like an annoyance and a populist movement that feeds us comforting fables. Neither one is actually fixing the pipes. We are living in a system that relies on delusion as a functional tool. And honestly, until we demand transparency that actually hurts the people in power, we are just going to keep watching the same play over and over again. It is hard to expect good governance when the people in charge are effectively reading from someone else's script. That same lack of focus is currently wrecking the semiconductor industry. Intel is losing its technical edge to companies like Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, pronounced TSMC. The chipmaker prioritized stock buybacks and dividends over long-term investments in extreme ultraviolet lithography. That shift from technical leadership to finance-focused governance created a stagnant culture. It opened a vacuum that rivals were happy to fill. Here is the thing. We are seeing a pattern across industries where short-term financial engineering is cannibalizing the actual product. You see it at Intel. We are also seeing reports of potential M&A activity in the payment sector, though these remain speculative. It is a messy environment for any company trying to find its footing. Look at Uber. They are pivoting from being the disruptor to being the regulatory incumbent. They are lobbying for mandates that favor human-driven networks over autonomous fleets. It is a defensive play. They are trying to build a moat with legislation, because their own autonomous initiatives simply have not scaled. It is a sign of a company that has stopped innovating its core product and started protecting its territory. The common thread here is an obsession with the wrong kinds of KPIs. We are watching a shift from building things to managing spreadsheets. As cities use zoning laws to squeeze sectors, operators are being forced to choose between better facilities or obsolescence. It is a brutal, high-churn environment. It is not just the big firms. Founders are hitting the same wall. The push for constant growth is turning business into an addictive game that consumes the founder's home life. When you treat family time as a variable to be squeezed, the foundation of the home erodes. The business ends up costing you more than it pays out in net value. It is a classic trap. We build these systems to secure our lives, but then we let the systems dictate our presence. Leadership is suffering from a similar delusion. Many managers operate in what people call founder mode, which is just a fancy way of saying they are micromanaging their teams into dependency. They end up acting as diminishers. They restrict their team's intelligence by creating environments built on fear. They are doing the opposite of what a multiplier does. A multiplier builds an environment where intelligence grows. They know when to step back and let the team work. There is a lesson here about where we put our money. Experts are pointing out that market hype is moving further away from consumer fundamentals. The AI boom looks a lot like the dot-com bubble. Everyone is excited about the software, but the profitability is nowhere to be found. The real value is in the infrastructure. Companies that focus on semiconductor hardware are in a better position than the ones betting on the next unproven model. The media is not immune to this rot. The British Broadcasting Corporation, the BBC, is struggling with a massive drop in license fees. They are cutting budgets and reclaiming intellectual property rights from independent producers to stay afloat. It is a zero-sum game. If they squeeze the independent ecosystem to balance their own books, they are just destroying the very thing that makes their content valuable. We are seeing a move toward a fragmented public square. When the industry prioritizes survival over the actual work of journalism, the space for real debate shrinks. It feels like we are in an era where the institutions are hollowing themselves out from the inside. They are trading their long-term viability for a short-term hit of revenue or control. It is not sustainable. Whether it is a chipmaker or a newsroom, you cannot engineer your way out of a lack of substance. You either build something that works, or you eventually become a legacy asset waiting to be liquidated. Ignoring the fundamentals to chase a short-term win rarely ends well for anyone. Even in sports, the results are rarely what the initial hype promised. A few other things worth knowing today. Indigenous foodways are a hell of a lot more than just a diet. Traditional ingredients like the four corners, potato, act as a sort of genetic memory, and reconnecting with them seems to actually reactivate neural pathways. It is a shift from performative activism to something that looks like actual systemic reconstruction. We are lonely as hell because we think buying more junk will fix us. We surround ourselves with products and then get surprised when they don't provide the companionship humans are actually wired for. The gap between what we expect from our stuff and what it can do is widening. Apple is currently involved in legal proceedings against OpenAI regarding discovery processes. The framing from some analysts is that this is a stall tactic to slow down OpenAI's hardware development so Apple can hit the market first. It is a classic move, and it shows Apple learned the hard way that they should have done this back when Android was starting out. Analytics in team golf like the Solheim Cup, pronounced Solheim, are a tool, not a Bible. When captains use the data as a suggestion instead of a rule book, they can actually account for the human element. Turns out, people are still better at managing people than a spreadsheet is. If you are betting on horses, you have to look past the surface. Handicapping requires knowing the difference between beaten claiming conditions, which change from track to track. If you rely on shallow assumptions about a horse's eligibility, you are going to lose your shirt. That is the wrap for this evening. Check the links in the show notes if you want to dig into the actual filings.